Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are merging the streams here and bringing together the new and the old. And I tell you what, this guy has been coming on the program since about 1993 or 94, when I rolled out of my almost famous rock criticism days of the 1980s. And I believe it was Chips Enough who knew the guys from Cheap Trick, who knew the guys from Sticks. And JY, I think it was Chips saying, "Brother JY, I know JY, man. I get JY. JY loves baseball, man. He Aparicio, he'll come on." And I'm like, JY is the first rock star I ever loved. Him, Dennis, Tommy, the whole thing, the Cornerstone Tour at the Baltimore Arena. And James Young, I have in the new age found, and I know we're not Zooming or doing any of that, but I have shown every ticket stub, I have shown every backstage pass, every autographed picture disc of Pieces of Eight from my audience on Facebook and social media. And I'm just glad in 2020, wearing masks and all this stuff, we're all still alive to talk about the power of rock and roll. JY, how are you? You safe? Everything good with the family out there in Chicago?
We are, as I say, maintaining here. our social distances and erring on the side of caution. I was a little bolder about it in the beginning, but when I thought my wife's had some medical issues over the years, and she's got a few chronic things that are not bad, but I think she'd be more susceptible to if I was exposed and exposed her, that she'd be far more susceptible than I would be. And but I just said, this is the long term we're talking about here, and we got to miss some shows. We got to miss being doing what we love to do for a while. Hopefully not for a whole lot longer, but I don't know. It looks like it's going to drag on for a while.
Well, look, I started talking to music stars and musicians and guitarists and songwriters back in the 80s, and I have these old interviews, and I'm promoting the fact that we've moved everything to Baltimore Positive. I have an interview during the damn Yankees era with your bandmate Tommy Shaw. I have interviews with Dennis when you guys put the band back together back 30 years ago. I've had so many years with you. I've never had Chuck on. I wish I had, but I found Todd this summer, and we said, we talked a little bit, and it is a fascinating journey for every musician ever in any way to say what happens when it stops. JY, I've been in sports 30 years. I never thought they wouldn't have a March Madness, and they wouldn't have a Masters, and they wouldn't have a Preakness, and they wouldn't have an opening day. And then you start to think, well, what are we going to do, right? So for you guys, and I guess this is where you and I intersect, is I had just seen Cheap Trick at the Warner Theater. I want to give a little love to Debbie Rondo. Gave me great seats. They were unbelievable, JY. I mean, I know, Rockford and Chicago forever. They were incredible, and you were next on the agenda. You were coming to the Warner Theater. It was like St. Patrick's Day week, and then all hell broke loose. I mean, I was like 4 days away from seeing the band, man. So I know, where were you when all of this happened back
then? Well, we were home. We had the last show we did was New Orleans Mardi Gras. We were on stage at 1:30 in the morning till 3 a.m. We followed Tim McGraw. First time I met the guy, a very nice guy.
Baseball story there, JY. Little sports angle there, buddy.
Yeah, I know. We got he's the son of Tug, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, 3 a.m. we got off stage, and we went straight to the airport to fly home, which is what I do on the last day. Typically, I like taking the first flight out and just getting back to my getting home and getting centered in the Chicago area, where I'm from the very beginning, of course. And I don't really want to talk about the Bears being 5-1 this year, but
we can bring that up. And so, I mean, I still do sports around here. I mean, I'm the one few guy going to Ravens games. I've been to three of the road games. I don't go to the home games, but there's nothing spookier, dude. Like, you do sound checks your whole life. You know what I mean? You know what it's like to be in there at 2 o'clock and sound check and play Blue Collar Man or whatever when it's empty, and then you get to do it at 10 o'clock when it's full, right? This empty thing, whoo, man, whole different level. But
yeah, well, I can imagine, but it's at least, thank goodness it's on television, because television, which is how we usually amuse ourselves when there's nothing else going on and we're not allowed to go out and, go anywhere. Television was so boring, but at least now that having football and the NBA championship on there, and now the World Series is on here, we've got lots of stuff to watch, and I've started watching golf even, because
Well, it started first. That was sort of the reemergence drug to sports, right?
Yeah.
But I guess all of us have had a lot of, I mean, I don't want to say too much time on our hands here, but I just threw it in there. I was going to say a lot of time on our hands. But I guess to assess all sorts of things, and it's a time none of us were prepared to say, well, let's just take 6 months off, especially for musicians, right? Because it's just not the way you live your life, right?
Well, I mean, nothing lasts forever, and I'm sure that a lot of the bands from, you know, from the 60s thought they would survive into the 70s, but I mean, the bands like The Who and Cream and Jimi Hendrix took over for the Beatles and went on from there, and then, you know, and then the bands like Styx, Boston took over after that, and then the next decade you've got Kurt Cobain and you got Dave Grohl and you got Chips Enough. So, and now we're in the new millennium, and I don't know what we have, but it's kind of everything is kind of available now, which it was not before. You can stream things, and it's harder to get paid and actually earn a living than it was when before music was digitized. But now that it is, it's you know, people have. A lot of it just gets handed out for free, and that's okay too, because my favorite part is being live on stage, and that's I am missing that, but I'm confident it'll be back at some point in time, and I really have watched my health. Even though I'm 70 years old, I'm ready. I plan to do this. I saw B.B. King when he was in his mid 80s. I'm going to outlast him if I have anything to say about it.
Well, I mean, give me a little look at that. What's it like to be your age and do this for a living? And I haven't never asked you that because you've never been to your age and doing this. But, I mean, I saw you, 58 weeks ago or there. I mean, it was the middle of summer last year. You guys played down at the beach in Ocean City. You're playing outdoors. I mean, it's just a beautiful night. Not an ideal show from a load-in and load-out or Merriweather Post or whatever. But certainly, you know, you're playing places you've never played in different ways as opposed to playing hockey rinks, which you did. I mean, you guys have played in every possible way, the online part of this in presentation. I mean, one of the reasons I came to you, Jay Wise, one of the early videos I saw during lockdown was Tommy singing to his creature, right? Like, a lot of people saw that online,
yeah.
and it was... He was the first rock star. Kurt Newman from the Bodines was the second on my Facebook line where they were doing really interesting versions of their music and talking to my heart, talking to me through songs that mean something to me. And I think there's really something special about that during this period of time, too.
Well, you adapt. Flexibility and adaptability is what I preach and have preached forever because change is the only constant in life. And I'm somewhat prepared for times like these, but you know it requires patience and persistence. I think it's going to get back to where it was, but I think it's profoundly unpredictable as to when. So
JY is here from Styx. James Young, of course, a recurring character through all of these years and doing this. You know, I have a whole list of stuff we've never talked about because you haven't been on in a while.
Right.
And we've talked a whole lot more off the air than on the air. I mean, backstage and here and there, my wife's illness. I don't think I've had you on through any of that. You guys donated an incredible guitar. So I guess I'll begin with this because you want to do sports for 100 on the Jeopardy show here, JY. You know, I camped out for tickets on the Kilroy tour with Ron Zukowski. We've talked about that, and I shared that ticket. I had second row center at the Capitol Center that night. And, you know, all these years later, how in the world did Renegade become the song for the team that I hate? And then I become friends with the head coach in Tomlin. So Tomlin comes into Baltimore. I show him the Renegade guitar. He's like, oh, man, those guys come to our games. They sing the national anthem. I'm like, yeah, every time we play you, you know, I run into Tommy Shaw. And so anyway, how did the Renegade thing happen? Because my audience is going to want to know about that in Baltimore. Because, I mean, I loved Renegade in 79, 80, 81, 82. And now, like, this century it hadn't worked out, so you know it hasn't been such a great song around here, JY.
Well, I mean, when that record, when Pieces of Eight came out with Renegade on it, that album, 1978, I had a dear friend that was in Pittsburgh radio, and dear friend that I just met maybe 2 years before that. He'd been in a smaller market from there, and he told me the guitar solo in Renegade is too long. That's what he said to me. But somehow they had, that was the days when you had the battles. You would put one song up against the other, and the listeners would get to vote on it. And then you'd have these nightly battles on rock radio. And Renegade, I think, won 2 weeks straight. And so it got pounded into the brains of the people of Pittsburgh. Okay, cut to 2003. Heinz Field, the Steelers are down to I can't remember whom. And they got their backs to the wall, and they needed to make a defensive stand. And it was the young man who played the music really is 20 or 30 years younger than me, maybe more. And it was his wife that suggested, he was in charge of playing the music that goes on in the speakers out there. I think they probably had to okay it, but his wife suggested play Renegade. And he had never done it before. He did that. And the crowd kind of went crazy because that song was very popular in its day. And I think everyone sort of, in their own mind, relates to being a renegade in some way, shape, or form in their lives. And it just got the crowd fired up, and it got the team fired up, and they came back to win the game from being down after making a great defensive stand. So then they just kept using it, and it kept working for them. And we had nothing to do with it except creating the song.
So you don't want to be blamed for it in Baltimore is what you're saying.
Baltimore can't blame sticks. I mean, once our music is out there, you know, it's everyone's property in a sense. And, yes, they need to get our permission to play it on television or something like that, but because we get paid, we grant permission.
Well, what's the thing you're most proud of, you know, all these years later? I mean, that's a stupid fanboy question of mine, but, like, all the stuff you've done when you have to, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame comes, what's the thing that you say about all of this over 50 years?
You know, it's I don't know if I can point to any one thing that's just been, you know, like the pinnacle of it all. But when we Paradise Theater, 81 was our biggest year, 110 sold out arenas across the United States. And just to weave another little sports story in here, even though I know we're not a sports station.
We're sports anytime we want to be, J.Y.
Well, there was a guy named Doug Hicks that played for Chicago Blackhawks. And I had a buddy who was really friends with the trainer, and they put together some of the guys. Tony Esposito came out, Doug Wilson came out, this guy Doug Hicks, Grant Mulvey, who I met at that point, and so I became friendly with a lot of the Blackhawks. Hung out with them, went out drinking after the show, after the games, and so Doug Hicks gets traded to Edmonton, and we're headlining the Edmonton thing.
Northlands Coliseum. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And
well, Gretzky played there. Yeah.
Gretzky he's drafted number one draft. They were the worst team and they got the number one drafts. So there's the kid Wayne Gretzky, 17 years old, and so I'm having I've got Hicksy and his buddies hanging out backstage, and he's oh, here's the kid. You know, I said so I put a beer in his hand. And, he was underage, but I gave the great one a beer when he was underage in his first few moments in Edmonton. And he still remembers that, so.
I have a couple of rock stars that gave me beer underage. So, J.Y., I started backstage at Hammerjacks when I was 17 years old. And I've had Bud Becker on. I was the music critic from the papers. It was very Cameron Crowe back in the day. And I had to get, some permission to get in. And the only rule was, don't drink. Like,
right.
If you get caught drinking here, you're going to get thrown out. You're going to lose your job. You're not going to get to hang out with rock stars, okay? So in 1986, and I guess this brings it into more current a flavor, Alex Van Halen was chosen out of the four guys to do the interview with the Baltimore Sun music critic in 1986 on the 5150 tour. They had just thrown Roth out of the band. Hagar came in the band. And he invited me up to Philadelphia, and Alex Van Halen put a beer, and I got the ticket stub, so I know how old I was. So, Alex Van Halen gave me a beer, and it wasn't Hammerjacks or whatever, and I'm like, you don't turn down a beer from Alex Van Halen, right, J.Y., at any point, right?
Love those Van Halens.
Well, I mean, this is, we're getting to this point here where we lose people, and, I never forget where I was when Neil Peart left us, and Eddie Van Halen left me, Tom Petty, who I saw on the tour before all of this. I'm not macabre about any of this, because, like you said, you could play another 15 years. For you having this period of time taken away from you, the band, everyone, I'm where you are, what is your sense on maybe getting back and getting back out? Because I was 3 days away from hanging out with you guys and seeing the band, and I think everybody wants this, but in your mind, are you thinking next summer? I mean, as a band and as a business, as artists?
Well, I mean, we were booked all this year. We've got really, we're not really in a formal partnership with Live Nation, but we do a lot of their venues, and 2021 was going to be the 40th anniversary of our most successful tour and our only album that got the number one, which is Paradise Theater. And so we've got giant touring plans lined up for next year. Now, those probably, I don't know what's going to happen, but at the moment I'm not optimistic about it. I really think my brain is set on 2/22/22, which is the 50th anniversary of us signing our first recording contract. February 22nd, 1972, we signed our first recording contract in Chicago. February 22nd, 2022, we'll be on stage somewhere.
Well, I hope that it's not outdoor in Chicago that day. I mean, I'm coming. I'll be there. I'll come for the pizza. I'll eat some Pequods, you know. JY is here from Styx, and we're talking about, Paradise. By the way, can I be the guy with the mop in the beginning of the show, just locally? Can I, I'll meet you in St. Louis or something one night, and I'll mop the floor to start the show with the ragtime piano. Does that work?
You can be the Fuller Brush Man.
All right. Well, I mean, at least I have a memory for this stuff, right? I don't make this up.
You haven't burned your brain cells out. That's very good.
Look, we were together right before my wife got cancer. You guys were playing with Tesla and Leopard, and you came running to me, and you said, I got to get you on the Styx World video, and you told the crazy Don King story on video. Yeah, I want to ask you, because so many people...
I know James Young.
JY, here from Chicago. I know JY. So I have the picture, and you can find that at WNST Classic at Baltimore Positive. But you and I did like a video hit for your camera on something you were going to do on Styx World. It was video related. And, everybody has seen your Behind the Music, JY, and you and the band and the brand, all other stuff. But in the modern era, so many artists have been releasing. I mean, look at what Springsteen's doing this week with his new album, right? Like, doing a movie about all this stuff. Where's your archival stuffage and storytelling and you and Tommy telling stories about the day you met?
Where is all that?
Giant storage
area is filled with stuff that when the time comes, we'll break it out.
Well, I need to see it, man.
I mean, the funny story about the Don King thing is I was introduced to Roger Penske at a NASCAR race, and I've never met this man. And he did the same thing Don King did. I know James Young from Styx. Because I think these guys just have really rich guys that are great salesmen. They pretend they're very good at pretending that they know everything and everybody, even if they don't. And I don't believe either one of those guys was really aware of me, but they sure put on a good front.
Well, he held up the American flag and took a picture with you.
So I know James Young from Styx.
You said you were from Chicago. He's like, I know everybody in Chicago. Yeah, for you, I guess through all of these years and the strange things that happened, the cartoons, the pop culture things, the hanger-ons like me that, saw you on the Cornerstone Tour on February 8th, 1980 with my mom, and you mentioned those two Paradise shows. I saw it at the Capitol Center, and I saw it in the summer. I even gave you guys a shout-out back on July 31st because it made me remember my mom taking me for Chinese food before the show, so... You remember these things when you're 12 years old, JY. But, the Too Much Time video and the sort of recreation of that on late night television, man, where are you when you first see that video and see something you did 40 years ago redone so amazingly deftly? It was an homage to your band.
My better half is a huge Jimmy Fallon fan, so she's got him on every night. And so we watched the whole thing evolve. And, I had people calling me going, Jimmy Fallon, is mentioning Too Much Time on my hands. He loves the song, and then they're messing around with it. And it just went on for 2 weeks until they finally actually redid the video using all the original shots. And I've never met the man. Nobody in the band has met him that I know of.
You've never been on the show?
Styx has never been on Saturday Night Live.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, for me, I thought it was quite an open. Anytime somebody puts that much creativity into something you've done that long ago, I mean, it's like anytime anybody covers your music, right? I mean,
you look at Adam Sandler, Big Daddy. We never met Adam Sandler, but in that movie, he mentions us a bunch of times, like we're the greatest rock band there is. We gave him permission to use the music and stuff and to say that stuff, but it was like, we don't know the guy, and he picked us out, and that movie was huge.
Well,
back
you know,
in 1999.
I think of the links of classic rock and what you mean to me, and you know what Rush and Journey and you know all those bands, Foreigner. I mean, you know, I had Pearl Jam tickets this summer. I had tickets to see you guys. I had tickets to see the Stones a couple of places and some flights. So you think of all that goes away, but there are still people doing stuff. I want to give Hagar a shout out and one of your pals, Kevin Cronin from REO Speedwagon. They did like a video cast from Catalina. There are things still sort of in attention and people still staying on top of this, but for all of the era and all the years later, I can't imagine when you were 30 years old you saw a business model at 70 years old that included rock and roll, right? It didn't exist.
Well, I didn't exclude it. If with a gun to my head, I probably would have said no. You know, the world will have moved on to something else.
Well, what were you going to do when it all fell apart?
Well, I do have an aerospace engineering degree to fall back on, although I was only a C+ student because I didn't really care. But my dad insisted we all go to college.
Whoa! I didn't know this about you. This is why I need archival footage, JY. I mean,
mechanical and aerospace engineering class of 1970, Illinois Institute of Technology.
So hold on, you were like in that kind of a school environment when we landed on the moon? That must have freaked you out, right? Like that must have been incredible, right?
I was always a space geek anyway, so it.
Where were you when they landed on the moon?
I think I was playing a gig somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
It did not like completely mesmerize you in any way?
To a point. I think, you know, I was a little afraid of something going wrong. I didn't want to watch that on television. So.
Well, fair enough. JY from Styx here. I'm asking you questions you've never been asked before, which is like part of the fun of this.
No, that was 69. Actually, that was before Styx, before I even met the guys, the rest of the guys there. We had our own band. I think we played in my parents' driveway that night. It's July 20th. Is that the date?
Yeah, there you go. Middle summer. I was 11 months old, 10 months old at that point, so I don't have a recollection of that.
Yeah.
I remember Watergate, and I remember, like, the 73 World Series, but those are kind of my, like, you know. Everything with me as a kid was sports, right? Because the Orioles and the Colts and all of that stuff.
I don't know if we had a color TV yet. I don't know if they were making them yet.
Well, I mean, they landed in black and white, and then they showed it on MTV for, like, forever, right? Now, right before the Too Much Time on My Hands video. I have two questions for you, because I asked Todd all about joining the band and his fandom. And first off, I shared the video of him coming on and talking to us before we did Zoom, too, and I'd love to get him back on. I've only met him in an environment where I see you and Tommy backstage or somewhere where we happen to be. So I've never really talked to him because I wind up talking to you, right, all the time. Sometimes
yeah.
Chuck will pull me up, and I've had a lot of conversation with him. But I've never really talked to Todd, so I had him on, and give me a story about you meeting him for the first time and Tommy, because, and I would even say, Lawrence, all the guys in your band, because you're the straw from the beginning of this, and Dennis and all of that, and Chuck and John, but you had a first glance with all of these guys. I mean, Tommy Shaw, first time you see him, you know you're going to be hanging out with him 50 years later, right?
You know, I mean, Tommy was in a band that played in and around Chicago. It was a club band, but they would do like a week in Minneapolis at a club, and then they'd do a week here and do a week there. But when disco came in, the club owners just decided we don't need a 10-piece horn band in here when we can pay a DJ to just spin records. We can save a lot of money that way. And so that thing kind of died out for him. But, you know, we had John Cerulski was unhappy what was going on in the band, and ultimately he left, and so someone had mentioned Tommy before, so he was the second guy we auditioned, and he could hit the high note on Lady. That's what we really needed, and so he was in.
That was it? Just hit the high note on Lady?
Well, we knew he was a great guitarist. I mean, a dozen people had told us that, and I was already a great guitarist, so it didn't really matter if we had another one, but having a second, two great guitarists who are different in style, and Tommy's a far superior acoustic player to me, by all means. Like, I'll play him on the piano, but... but the...
Well, the Stones had a couple guitars, so it could work, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Make it work. What about finding a drummer at that point? I've never asked you about this, and I know, you know, a lot of times sensitive, but now we've had a long time with someone who is in the drum world really looked at as... when I did it, people reached to me, I've had drummers. Slim Jim Phantom said his son's a drummer and watches Todd's instructional videos.
Well, Todd, I had heard about Todd, but I'd never seen him play. But he was really like number one call at sessions, even when he was like, you know, early 20s. His dad was a professional musician, and I think he was a drummer, but he was also a foot doctor. But Todd's comes from a musically gifted family. I'd heard he was great, and he came in, and he'd been a fan. He'd been to a lot of our shows, so he knew the music cold, and he even reminded us of, this is the way, you guys can't remember the ending you did in this, but I know what it is. I remember it, so I'll guide you through it. And I heard that, you know, after John Bonham died and Jason Bonham came into Led Zeppelin, that he sort of played the same role there, because he says, no, this is what my dad played there, and then this is how you guys did that song. I remember, you know. So it was like, it's funny having the next generation of people come along and correct you, because you can't really remember exactly what you did 20 years ago.
You know, I had fun talking to him because he talked about going to the shows I went to, because we're kind of the same age, you know. And he was not a kid fan, but I, the interesting thing that he made really clear was, hey, dude, I was 22, but, like, this was a chance to be. There's no fanboy going on here, you know? Like,
yeah.
I needed the gig. I wanted the gig. I knew how good the band, you know, like, all of that. But that it actually works, and that you guys, I mean, the behind the music thing now, probably shot 25 years ago, right? Like, that all these years later, Styx has found a comfort level that I'm quite comfortable with, you know, every year coming out, and tens of thousands of people are comfortable with, that you guys also like each other, and I'm around it, so I see it, you know, that there really is something about going out and doing this professionally for having the right human beings and the right mix of people to hold it together, because it's not easy work. You guys make it look easy when the lights go on at 9 o'clock, right?
Well, there's an incredible balance that exists in the band, and the fact that, you know, Tommy and I, along with Chuck, who was very, very sick for a while, and is an amazing. He's survived hell medically, and he's still around to talk about it.
How's he doing?
Still around,
is he okay?
On stage part of the time, but it was really Tommy and I decided we were going on without Dennis, and we're gonna, you know, get other people to, you know, to fill in the slots, and Dennis thought we'd fail without him, and we asked Dennis to come with, but you know, he was not interested, and so we went and did it, and ultimately he sued us when we were successful, and we settled out of court with him. We own the name, and he gets a piece of the action. Tommy and I just really get along because we're just two different animals that have incredible respect for one another, and I'm the only guy that's been here from the beginning and played on every damn show, so...
I guess my point, at one point, they were all strangers, right? And now they're part of, you know, what you do.
Yeah,
and,
but I mean...
And that's life's journey when you're 70, right?
Like Tommy knew Ricky Phillips from back in the day. He was in the Babies. The Baby opened up for us, although I never really interacted with those guys. But Tommy was more of a guy that did interact with the other musicians, and I was maybe too aloof in my own mindset and didn't think we should be co-mingling. But Tommy knew Ricky, and thank goodness. But Todd had also heard about Ricky because we had Glenn Burtnick, who we first dragged into this thing, who I had worked with, heard about through Jan Hammer, and I did my solo record with Jan Hammer, and then Glenn, who's a great artist in his own right and has co-written number one songs. Sometimes Love Just Ain't Enough, he did with Patti Smythe. She sang it, but he was the co-writer on it, And yeah, Glenn was great, but he's his own man, and he didn't feel. After a few years, he left, and then that opened the door for another bass player. And Ricky Phillips has fit the bill so perfectly. I didn't really know the man. I love him like a brother, and he's a great player. He knows everybody in L.A. He was there through all the crazy stuff that went on. And Ricky's stepsister, which you probably don't like me talking about, his stepsister is Kathleen Kennedy, who is Spielberg's producer throughout his career. So Ricky's always had access to everything going on and behind the scenes with every Spielberg movie. He talks to his stepsister about it. Ricky is so mellow. He's a perfect guy to be in a band with because he's seen it all, and he's just happy to be part of something that's succeeding and that people get along. Because I mean, he was in Bad English, which was basically Journey with John Waite on lead vocal and Ricky on bass. And
they played my 21st birthday on Hammerjacks that night, so that I remember Bad English well.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's like, I mean, like Neil is just a unique individual and wants to do his thing. And Jonathan Cain was a different character from Chicago, actually.
Wrote some beautiful songs.
Yeah, and he's more of a balladeer, really. And Neil just wants to play his guitar all night long. So it, you know, but Ricky's perfect for the band. Todd is perfect for the band because he's a Chicago native. He's, you know, and there's the fact that Tommy and I have been here from the beginning, and the two of us collectively have made our peace with each other decades ago. I have a different skill set than he does, and he has certainly a more expanded musical skill set, at least in terms of stringed instruments. I can all play him on the piano, as I said already in this interview. But, I'm more of a businessman, and Tommy's just he's a creative animal. He just keeps writing, and God bless him for that.
You know, you mentioned something in the middle of this because I wrote down some notes here, stuff we've never talked about, and you mentioned sort of this competition that went on between bands, right?
Yeah.
And I think every time, you know, one of the people from that era leaves us, there's always this band or that band, or we opened for them, or they opened for us, or they opened for us in the beginning of the tour, but we were trying to blow them away. And that, you know, the battle of the bands, right? I mean, there's almost a sports part of that, right? Like that goes back to that era that I guess maybe now feels a little silly when you get a little older, but there really was. That was real for a lot of bands and a lot of labels and all of that in that era. Everybody trying to get oxygen, right?
Well, you know, that's it. One-upmanship and Don King and Roger Penske know me, so I don't have to worry about anything.
Who were your favorite bands? I mean, who was someone you would have camped out all night to get tickets for like I did on the Kilroy tour?
Well, I saw The Who July 4th, 1967, in Chicago at the Electric Theater, Kinetic Playground, whatever it was. That was 3 weeks after the Monterey Pop Festival. Keith Moon, John Entwistle, Pete Townsend. And so I saw them with Moon, and a lot of people didn't. And then I saw him play Tommy, the Auditorium Theater. Loved The Who as a band. Really loved that band. But Hendrix was my favorite. Saw him play five times in his lifetime, which and then that was, you know, his, he didn't last that long. I saw him 67, 68, and then twice in 1 week in 1969, 3 weeks before Woodstock. And I think I saw him once after that, and then of course he passed on. But The Who and Hendrix, I saw Cream play a number of times. Those guys, saw Led Zeppelin play a bunch.
Wow. So you talk about this the way I talked to my wife this summer about, like, hey, I was at Live Aid. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
really,
right.
I got the ticket. Like, here,
yeah.
Like, let's put the DVD on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part of that probably burned in you to make sticks something like that, right? Something that was sustainable.
Well, once, you know, those guys kind of set the tone. And when the first rock festival happened in Illinois, which was 1970, the band I had with my brother and a couple of other guys, we did original music, got a standing ovation in front of 10,000 people, but then the group broke up after that because a couple of the guys, someone had freaked them out, and they went into Jehovah's Witnesses for a while. And then I was tried putting the band back together, but it didn't really work, and I was just graduating from college, and I needed to make some money, and so the guys, Dennis and the Panazzos, called me up and said they didn't want to be, you know, trying to audition for them. I said, sure. You guys are working, I'll do it. And And we kind of, it was an uneasy thing at the beginning, but ultimately, you know, we got a recording contract, which was a wonderful thing in the early 70s.
Well, I've loved your music forever. You know that. And one of the fun things, I think, living this long and being a part of this is seeing so many of the bands go back and put albums together. And I know from a business standpoint, you know, you go out and you have a reunion tour, or not a reunion, but an anniversary tour, whatever it is, that there's a marketing part of that, playing the album all the way through. But I really did enjoy the night down at the Hippodrome when you guys were playing albums through and conceptually probably dusting off stuff that 40 years later, you thought to yourself, man, we haven't played that one in a long time. That was a pretty good song.
Yep.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you and all these years, and I hope you guys come back out and play all the music, and we'll complain about you not playing the songs that we like because you can only play 20 or 30 of them at any given point. And I hope you get the Paradise Theater back out. And I'm offering my services to sweep the floor before and after while you play the piano, all right?
Well, I don't know if I can ever call in the mayor of Baltimore if you get there. So,
if
you get to be mayor, you'll still come and help us out.
Well, you guys got to play the pier again, so I can sit outside and you know get the boats out in the harbor. We'll make a big summer night here, and we'll do it without masks from less than 6 feet. Hey, keep your wife safe. You be safe. It's always great to check in with you. I'm sorry we're not backstage after a show and talking about what a nice night it was, but hopefully sometime soon.
You got it.
JY, be well. JY from Styx, my man, for all of these years and all these concerts and all this fun. And if you want to see any of my Styx swag, I'll be sharing that out. You can find us out in the Music Classic tab at the New Baltimore Positive. All the same sports, all the same Luke Jones, all the same Ravens coverage and Orioles coverage that you are used to. Now move from WNST.net to Baltimore Positive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and rocking and rolling at Baltimore Positive.